Welcome to Found at TU, a monthly podcast where we talk with University of Tulsa faculty about their research, how they do it, why they love it, and what they are finding out. I'm Jolie Jensen, Hazel Rogers Professor of Media Studies at the University of Tulsa, and today we're talking with Dr. Portia Resnick, Clinical Assistant Professor of Athletic Training in TU's Oxley College of Health Sciences. Welcome to Found at TU, Portia.
Thank you for having me, Jolie.
Oh, so glad you're here. I like to begin by asking one question, which is in one simple sentence, who are you and what do you study?
I am a clinical professor of athletic training, and I study how people recover from exercise because I want to understand what the different factors are that either enhance or will detract from their ability to recover and to get back to their training.
How did you get interested in all of this?
I'm a certified athletic trainer. I'm also a board certified massage therapist. I'm an avid runner, an avid distance runner. And so I got interested in this actually through more of my clinical work with many of my athletes and my clients. One of the big things is they want to get into their exercise. If they're injured, they want to be able to get back. They want to keep their performance level high. So between their interests and my own interest, I started studying recovery from exercise.
And so when we say exercise, we mean any physical activity by the athlete or the non-athlete. Do you mostly work with athletes or?
Here I mostly work with athletes. I mostly work with the TU athletes, but I have worked with the weekend warrior population. I worked with a fabulous woman who has run a marathon in all 50 states and is working on all 7 continents, but she's an amateur because nobody pays her to do this. So everything from your weekend warrior to your elite athlete.
So when you say clinical practice, this is you meeting with clients at TU. Is there a clinic or how does this work?
At TU, actually, I work in the TU athletic training room. So I do work with our TU student athletes. In the fall, I work with the football team. And in the spring, I kind of float around one day a week for any of the athletes who might need some of my specialties.
So you combine, if I understand it right, working directly and doing independent research. Or tell me how your research connects with the work that you're doing.
So because I'm fortunate enough to have a relationship with athletics, it came about that my research is in the recovery from athletics using heart rate variability, and I know we'll get to that. And so because of my relationship, I actually approached our athletic training staff as well as our strength and conditioning staff and talked to them about a combined project where I basically brought a device to the athletes that they could use to track their performance, to track their recovery, to track their sleep. I got the funding for it. I bring it to them. I get the data for research, and the student athletes, as well as their staff, get some information as well as to what's going on.
I can't wait to hear about that. Okay, so let's start with that project then. So there's a device. Tell me about the device, and then we'll get back to that heart rate variability.
So the device is called WHOOP, W-H-O-O-P, all in capital letters. It's a brand new device. If you watch college football or professional football, or if you watched recently the Women's College World Series, the national champions from Florida State are wearing this device. It's small on the wrist. It's actually thinner than your wristwatch, and it sits right up against the bones of your wrist. It has these glowing lights on the bottom that take your heart rate through changes in pulse. It's a light wave called photoplethysmography. Don't ask me to try to spell that.
Okay.
But it's basically using light waves. It's the same thing as if you go to the hospital, they put that little stick on your finger that kind of glows. So it's taking your heart rate, it's taking your measures as well. It can figure out when you're exercising, when you're sleeping, how well recovered you are.
How does it do that well recovered part?
Well, it uses a formula and a combination of your rest and not just did you sleep for 8 hours, but was it a light sleep? Was it a deeper sleep? How active were you throughout the day? How much sleep did you get compared to how much exercise you're doing? And it also, again, looks at that heart rate variability.
Okay, so now's our chance to find out about that.
So when we think about our heart rate, we think that our heart beats steadily like a drum. In fact, if you watch Dirty Dancing, you'll hear them use that as an analogy for step. So we think it should be a steady beat. In reality, our heartbeat is going to vary. So if you say it's 60 beats per minute, it's not necessarily one beat every second. It could be 1.2 seconds. It could be 0.8 seconds. So the variability is the difference in time between heartbeats. Now, the more variable you are, the more parasympathetic or relaxed you are, which sounds counterintuitive. Okay? You think if you're rhythmic that you're relaxed, and that's not true. That's actually a sign of sympathetic activity, that fight or flight, that stress response. The more variable, the more parasympathetic, the more recovered you are from exercise. And all exercise is going to put stress on the body. It's the good kind of stress. Okay? And so we want that stress of exercise, but we also want the body to come back and to recover from that.
So let me see if I've got this straight. The autonomic nervous system has both sympathetic and parasympathetic. That's the two halves
Correct.
Of the system. And the parasympathetic is the rest and recover one, and yet it has an irregular heartbeat. And the regular heartbeat is the sympathetic, the fight or flight, which is also activated in the good stress of physical activity. So is it the ratio then that you're – how do you know if someone's well-recovered? Is it because their parasympathetic is dominant, or is it
– So we're looking at – doing a little bit of math, which luckily there's computers for that, but we're looking at the standard deviation. So the larger the standard deviation, normally when we talk research, we want small standard of deviation, right? We want everybody to be close together. So that's why I say this is always opposite. We want actually a larger standard deviation, which means you're more variable, and that relates to that rest and digest phase.
And if I understand it right, a highly trained athlete both goes to peak performance and to peak rest smoothly, whereas some out-of-shape person might not. Is that
That's
fair
correct.
To say?
Yeah, that
okay.
is. Also, if your exercise isn't very taxing for you, like let's say you've been doing the exact same exercise routine for the past 5 years and you can't figure out why you're not making any changes, well, your body's used to it. So it expects that on Mondays you're going to lift legs, and on Tuesdays you're going to ride the bike, and on Wednesdays you're going to lift your arms. So it gets used to that, and that becomes part of your normal routine, and your body doesn't actually go through that sympathetic, so it's not going to rebound and make changes in that parasympathetic.
Interesting. This has been documented, and this is why people are encouraged to fool the body, basically.
You are. You're always encouraged to go through kind of training peaks and valleys and not do the same thing every single day.
Well, let's go back to this idea of recovery, since that's your specialty, right? Could you explain what all the elements of recovery are so that I understand a little bit more about what you're talking about?
Yeah. So there's lots of things that can go into recovery. One is the amount of rest you're getting. So to me, there's two big things that we can control that go into our recovery. And one is sleep. The other is hydration, how well hydrated you are. So those are the first two things that can really affect the body. And those are things that we can really change. The other thing is also making sure you're eating good food and enough good food as well. Not too much, not too little. For fueling. And then sometimes people will look at other things to try to help them. Some people swear by compression sleeves in order to help their recovery. Some people will swear by an Epsom salt bath. And there's stretching, yoga. There's lots of things that you can use and can try to recover so that basically you're at peak and ready for your next exercise session.
But I'm betting some of those have evidence-based, and some of those are kind of anecdotal. People just say this works for them. So is part of what you do figure out which ones really work and which ones are kind of superstition?
Well, there's nothing wrong with superstition, right? That can definitely help us. The problem with a lot of the research, and one of the reasons I chose looking at recovery, is we're not talking about giant numbers. When we talk about research, getting a little research in there, we talk about whether something is statistically significant or not. Well, if you feel better and you can run faster, it may not be significantly better, but it may be just enough to get you through. And so there's a difference between a clinical change and a statistical change. And so I want to really look at people from that clinical perspective.
Again, that they feel that it makes a difference, whether
right.
or not there's statistically significant evidence that it does.
Correct.
They are feeling better yeah. about themselves and their recovery from exercise.
Right. Yeah, okay. It's what we call a minimally clinical difference. So it's basically, even if you think of your pain scale like a 1 to 10, if you were a 5 today and you're a 4 tomorrow, that's going to maybe make a big difference to you, even though from a statistician, they'd say, well, it's just one number. There may be something that's a little different with that. Also, a lot of the recovery research is very lab-based. And I always joke around that I'm a field rat and not a lab rat. And a lab rat is going to put you through the exact same workout and then have you try something new and do the exact same workout again and see if you can repeat that performance. Whereas what's great about my research is I'm a field rat. So I want to strap the device on an athlete, send them to go out and do their normal workout, and then track them through the progression that their coaches are going to put them through and see how their body reacts to that.
So that's what you're doing, it sounds like, right now. Can you take us through a kind of how you do your research, a day in the life of you as a researcher?
Sure. I love my research because, well, some people aren't going to like this part about it, but my research involves checking in with our football players during their 6 a.m. running sessions, which that's why I say a lot of people will think I'm crazy. But I get up in the morning and I go and I watch them condition and I'm watching them get better. Right now, during that time, we're using that to help charge the devices. They have a little battery that goes on them that the athletes then wear while they're running. It gives the device a little charge. We collect them because we want to make sure the athletes don't lose them or forget to charge their devices. And then they'll go through their lifting sessions a couple of days a week, or sometimes they'll just run or have workouts with their coaches. And so we kind of check in with them about 4 to 5 times a week, charge their devices, make sure that everything is going okay, troubleshooting anything. The device is connected to an app on their phone, so sometimes we have to check in with that. I had an interesting situation the other day. One of my student assistants sent me a text message. She said, oh, so-and-so's device broke. Can you come over and take a look at it? And so I had to come over and troubleshoot and bring him a new device in the morning. And so we strapped that on and got that connected to his phone and got everything all squared away for him. And he was ready to go.
So there's a lot of personal interaction, it sounds like. Are they excited about being field rats? Is that?
I definitely think there's some excitement. And there's definitely, they're athletes, so there's a little level of healthy competition. For example, I came in on a Monday, and two or three of the guys said to me, I got like 11 hours sleep on Saturday night. Oh, my goodness. Wait till you see my numbers. I'm doing so much better. So they'll have little healthy competitions. They'll check their heart rate when they're training to see how high they were able to get it during the training. They'll check, some of them will take a look at their calorie count, see how much they're burning, see how hard they worked. But the biggest thing has been the sleep. They've really been making a conscious effort to sleep a little bit more, to get some more rest and to understand how that's going to help their body to recover. So we're excited about that.
And they really see those results then with the app, with the numbers. They're keeping as close to track as they can.
Yep, they can't see all the information. Mm-hmm. Some of it is a little bit more scientific, so we get some different information from the app than they
see.
They're
not figuring out standard deviations.
No, they are not calculating standard deviations, but and they are answering some questions like, they're understanding their bodies. Did you have caffeine too close to when you were ready to fall asleep, and how is that affecting your body? Did you have a really hard workout? Should you go to sleep a little bit earlier tonight? How recovered are you? How do you feel the next morning? And there are times when the coaches tell them, oh, we're going really hard this week. You should feel it. And maybe they look at their phone and they say, oh, yeah, look at that. I am, not as well recovered, but I knew that. My coach told me that. That's what they're trying to get at.
Are the coaches as interested in your data as the athletes themselves?
The coaches definitely are. We're hoping to give them a little bit more information and help them track. But yeah, they can see what their athletes are doing. The athletes were, of course, it's research. So the athletes themselves consented to do this. But we also picked athletes that we knew would be interested and that the coaches would be interested in them tracking and seeing how they're doing.
That's got to be rewarding to see the engagement of others in your research. Not everyone, if they're hiding in the lab, they don't have that kind of experience. So is that what you like best about doing the research? Tell me what you like best about your research.
I do like the fact that it's what we call quasi-experimental. So typical straight research, you don't really want to change anything. So there's probably somebody out there listening to this going, oh my goodness, she's letting her athletes know how much they sleep. Oh my God, they can sleep more. Yes, because that's what I like about this research is it's not just about me getting the data, but it's about them learning about their bodies and learning to get better. And that's the clinical portion. That's the applicable portion of my research, as opposed to hiding away and doing it in the lab and then saying, oh, here's what we found. I like that it's this way and there's the potential for some change. We did have an injury come up with one of our athletes, and now we get to kind of see how his body progresses through the injury and how it's healing and see what types of things are changing with him during that time. So there's a lot of interest within that.
Mm-hmm. So what would you like least if what's, you know, the about your research?
Like all human subject research, it is human subject. It is subject to some human error. So I definitely, the kid that I looked at 3 days in a row and I said, you're still not wearing your device. Oh, no, it lost its charge. I know, but you need to come see me so I can charge it. Yeah, I'll get to it. So some of those little things, it is technology, so troubleshooting technology, and I try to do the best I can, but every once in a while I've got to go back to the company and say, hey, we're having an issue, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Like I said the other week, the device breaking, not the athlete's fault, it just, a little piece broke off, and so we just had to exchange it out for a new one, and, you know, so those are the little things, but all of that is going to happen in research. We kind of expect that there's going to be something that's not going to be perfect.
So the results of your research, like most in most academic mm-hmm. settings, will go into academic referee journal articles.
Correct.
But I know personally that you're also interested in becoming more of a public scholar. So can you tell us more about how you became interested in this area and how you're committed to spreading the word about to outsiders?
Oh, like I said, my entire interest in this research came from the clinical application. So to be a clinician and look at it being applicable so that everybody can use it, just to put it in the scientific journals, while that's important as an academic, it's not as important as a clinician. And we use a lot in both of my areas of clinical expertise, athletic training and massage therapy, we use a lot of evidence-based practice. So I want to combine the ability to post in peer-reviewed academic journals with the ability to basically translate this to what somebody can use every single day. And so I've developed a website, PortiaResnick.com. I have already started putting some blog posts up there. You will be able to read about my experience with the Whoop, because I did not give this to my athletes without having first tried it myself. So you can hear about some of my trials and tribulations with that, as well as some other interesting things, whether it comes from the running community or the massage community, the athletic training community, some other things that come around, or any questions that you might have for me, like, hey, how can this help my training? How can this help my recovery? Send them my way and we'll look into it and we'll blog from an evidence-based practice perspective.
For listeners right now, I heard you mention hydration. I heard you mention sleep. Can you tell us more about what the weekend warrior needs to know about peak performance and recovery from it?
Yeah, so many people are looking for this new gadget, this new thing that they can use. And my first question to people all the time is, are you hydrating well enough? Do you carry a water bottle around with you? Do you survive on caffeine and monster drinks all day
what's
long?
What's wrong with those? No, seriously, what's wrong with caffeine and monster drinks?
Is that it's not the same as water for hydration levels. Oh. So it's not going to replace the fluid that you're putting out. If it is very hot weather, then you're going to be sweating more on days that you're exercising. One of the other things we look at with another challenge is, are you just using pure water? Are you using Gatorade to hydrate? Well, if you do over an hour of intense exercise, then yes, Gatorade is going to be good for you. But if you're doing a half an hour of an easy walk on the treadmill, which is great exercise, you should be doing that every day, then you just need to make sure that you're rehydrating. You don't need any extra calories necessarily with that.
So what's the ideal amount of hydration? I've seen athletes carrying around gallon jugs. I've read somewhere there's, you know, we're over hydrating. Mm-hmm. So tell us what evidence tells us.
So this is going to sound strange. I'm sorry to have to talk about this. But the best thing to know is, one, what color is your pee? It should be the color of light lemon juice. And then also, what's the frequency? Should be about every hour and a half to 2 hours if you're well hydrated. So always look at two things, because if you take a lot of vitamins or a lot of supplements, you're maybe a little bit darker than that. And that's it. Or if you've had your morning cup of coffee, you're in maybe a little bit darker than that. And that's okay. But then, you know, what's your frequency during the day? To me, that's the best way to tell whether or not you're hydrated. There's so much information out there about, oh, you should have this much or this much. And it's really hard for me to give you, the listener, a specific amount without talking to you first. Because you could be 6'8" and 250 pounds, or you could be 5' nothing and barely 100 pounds. And then you're going to need different intake.
But one of the first signs of dehydration would be what? Feeling weaker? Feeling less?
Dizziness, maybe even a little bit of nausea. Yes, you may definitely be feeling weaker, lightheaded. Those are some things to look for.
Now, sleep is something I think we don't respect enough in this culture. Tell me more about the value of sleep for recovery.
So we hear a lot, if you follow sports, about human growth hormone, right? This growth hormone and all of these athletes are taking it for performance enhancing. Your body makes growth hormone while you're sleeping. When you are very well rested and very well recovered, your body is going to produce it by itself. So if you work out in the gym an hour a day, I'm sure there's some people who do a lot of CrossFit. If you'd work and do your CrossFit, you want to grow. You want to get big, strong muscles. You want to sleep in order to recover so that your body can repair itself. So that's one of the big things, is that it helps the body to repair when we're in that rest phase.
So for all the weekend warriors listening, add hours or sleep till you don't set the alarm, or the more you exercise, the better you'll sleep, or what's the relationship?
Well, first of all, yeah, absolutely. Regular exercise, regular diet, all of those things will help enhance sleep. Again, sleep is kind of an individual thing. Things that tell you if you're sleep deprived, if you fall asleep the second your head hits the pillow, that's oftentimes a sign of somebody who's sleep deprived. Whereas if you're one of those people who's tossing and turning for an hour, either you've had too much caffeine, which is a possibility, or maybe you're sleeping a little bit too much. You also should not vary your wake times very much. And this is always the hardest thing for people. I get it if you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get your workout in and get your kids off to school and get to your job, and Saturday or Sunday comes and you just want to sleep in. But that makes it harder for you on Sunday night to kind of get your regular rest. So you shouldn't sleep in for much more than an hour or so on weekends. Try to keep a consistent bedtime, and that will really help. Most people need about 7 to 8 hours of sleep. If you're an elite athlete, it definitely could be a little bit more. Other people can get away with a little bit less than that. Many people use tracking devices anyway, Garmins and Fitbits, and a lot of those, if you wear them at night, they'll kind of track your sleep. And so that'll give you an idea as to how much you need or how much you're getting.
And the quality.
Absolutely. And the quality of the sleep.
Well, I know there's a lot of other things that people try. So can you mention some things that people think work that may not be worth the time and money?
As far as
exercise recovery? I mean, it sounds so boring kind of to just sleep more and, you know, make sure you're hydrated when you could be, I don't know, doing other cool stuff.
True. Absolutely. I pick those two because they're the easiest and the cheapest to do that. But there's tons and tons of gadgets out there. Some people will wear compression garments, basically that helps the venous return, so the blood
so
that's coming back towards the heart. There's a little bit of evidence to say that yes, that things like that can help with circulation and that can kind of help you feel better. Some people will wear them in recovery. Some people will actually wear them when they exercise, because the more blood you have towards your heart, the more you have that's able to pump back into circulation. Again, statistically, there's not great research that it helps, but a lot of evidence-based practice. Some people will use, even there's different brands of compression pants, that intermittent pneumatic compression, which basically means air kind of pushing and squeezing up against your legs. So there's chiropractors will sometimes have them. There's sometimes some spas within that. I would say not to do. There's a lot of cryogenic freezing. There's not a lot of research about that. That very, very cold dip. That's kind of a new thing.
The ice bath?
Bath. It's actually even colder than that.
Ooh.
So getting to a little bit of physics, not always my favorite topic, but talking about that briefly. Water freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 degrees Celsius. It never actually gets any colder than that. So even if you're in an ice bath, it's never going to be colder than that. Usually it's warmer, right? Because the water temperature is going to be warmer within the ice. So that's going to be nice and cooling on the body, and that's going to help kind of slow down your metabolism a little bit, and that can help you recover.
Is that bolster the parasympathetic?
Help bolster the parasympathetic a little bit, yep, and bolster that recovery because the body's not working as hard. basically, which is a lot of what's going on. Can also do some things with your blood vessels where basically, again, pumping blood closer back towards the heart by kind of constricting those blood vessels a little bit. So a lot of those things are good, but though cryogenic freezing is going to be at a much, much lower temperature because you're talking about, in some cases, dry ice, which is, I don't even know the freezing point of dry ice. Sorry about that, guests who are listening. I'm not that good because it's not something that I've studied very much because
it's kind of a fad.
It's kind of a bad thing that's been around. Yeah.
But no evidence.
No evidence that it works. Nope.
So any other myths we can bust or anything that I want to make sure you get this chance to say, don't waste your time and money or?
Well, I will tell you this. This is kind of one of my other things. And I am a fan of kinesio tape, but it is not a performance enhancer. It does
what
not make
kinesio
you.
Tape?
So this, you see those little bright colored tape that athletes will wear.
Sure.
Yeah, in the Olympics. And many people say, oh, these Olympians are wearing them and they're winning, you know, at the Olympics. And so this is going to help me. It's not there for performance. It is actually there to help with recovery. And it's there to kind of help with some very subtle things. But it's not going to make you run faster, jump higher, swim further. Mm-hmm. It's not performance based. A lot of it has to do with some of the pain mechanisms in the body, as well as our proprioception, which is our position sense in the body. But no real performance benefits for that. So I would consider that more of a recovery tool than I would consider that to be a performance
enhancer. What about cupping? I've noticed that on.
Oh, yeah. So cupping gets into one of my absolute favorite topics to talk about, which is fascia. Fascia is the lining of the muscles. It's kind of like the saran wrap that surrounds your sandwich. Okay, so it's not the sandwich itself, but it's the saran wrap that comes and surrounds it. And sometimes if you put too much on, it kind of crinkles up and pulls together. So if you're not well hydrated, there we go back to that fluid balance, then that fascia is going to kind of constrict and pull around your muscles. When you're nicely hydrated, it kind of opens up. I kind of also use I like food analogies. I use a spaghetti analogy. We've all cooked spaghetti. Mm-hmm. If you drain your spaghetti and just leave it in the sink, you get that big giant spaghetti clump, right? So how do you get your spaghetti not to stick together? You hydrate, you put your olive oil on it, you put your spaghetti sauce on it, right? So that's what drinking and increasing your fluid intake will do for your fascia within there. So what the cupping does is it helps kind of pull that fascia, kind of like, if you think of it like a suction, it kind of pulls it up, allows the blood to flow in that area and kind of helps relieve it. Cupping does that. If you're a fan of the foam roller, those big, dense rollers, you'll see them in white and black. Sometimes you'll see people use PVC pipe or some other things. That as well will do that same thing. It'll help kind of loosen up and get that blood flowing. How do we get more blood in our body? Hydrate much better. We sleep, which will also help kind of move around that circulation and kind of help that body system function a little bit better.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time. So can you recommend any books or articles or resources for listeners who want to know more about exercise and recovery, about, I want you to mention your website again, of course, but more about the work that you do?
So I would look for on my website at PortiaResnick.com. That will definitely help you. I do have a couple of other articles and things that I've worked on. I have another podcast through the Massage Therapy Foundation where we talk about a little bit about recovery from exercise and heart rate variability within that. I would say read as much as you can. There's lots of good articles on websites like Runner's World. They often will target a lot of things in relation to endurance athletes. So that's definitely one that we'll be able to look at that. So yeah.
And these are reliable sources. I mean, one of the things we want to do is make sure that people get well-informed, evidence-based.
Right. And also, if you're reading an article and they have a link to the scientific article, that's always a good sign as well, because then you can look at the research and you can kind of read that a little bit for yourself and see, did they get the research right?
Well, thank you so much for being here. This has been just terrific. I'm Jolie Jensen, and this has been Found It to You, a monthly podcast produced and edited by Scott Gregory at the studios of Public Radio Tulsa on the TU campus. We've been talking with Dr. Portia Resnick about her research on recovery from exercise. Please join us next month for another chance to hear a University of Tulsa faculty member discuss, in everyday language, the nature and value of their research.